From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. The Seattle PI reports a neighborhood group called the Coalition for a Sustainable SR 520, which represents neighbors around the bridge, is suing to stop construction of a new 520 bridge. They allege there are flaws in the state's environmental review. Washington was one of the states that made the deepest cuts at four-year public universities last year. The American Association of State Colleges and Universities found that the legislative cuts to higher ed here were 23%. Only three other states cut more deeply. The report also found that tuition increases in our state were above average. People are living longer. How's that going to affect careers, families, relationships, not to mention the earth? These are questions Sonia Arison grapples with in her new book, 100 Plus, How the Coming Age of Longevity Will Change Everything. Sonia Arison is a senior fellow at the Pacific Research Institute. You may have read her work in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. She joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco this afternoon. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Life expectancy has doubled over the past two centuries. Any sign it's going to slow down or stop?
No. In fact, I think it's going to grow exponentially rather than on a linear basis, which is what we've been seeing over time. One interesting little tidbit I was thinking in the drive over here to the studio that I should mention to everybody is that every day you're alive, you gain 6 hours. Did you know that?
No. What do you mean gain 6 hours?
Well, you gain 6 hours in time, in longevity time, to add to your life expectancy.
And you also note that old people aren't as old as they used to be. So 50 really is the new 40?
Yes, exactly. Of course, there have always been old people around, but not quite so many. We have a lot more old people today, and that number will grow. But the nice thing is that they tend to be in better health now than they were before. And I think that trend will continue. Chronic disease, as much as we see it and we're obviously and rightly bothered by it, is actually setting in at older and older ages now than it used to.
Sonia Arison, the author of 100 Plus, which refers to the old age we will be living to. In fact, she projects that someone who will live to the age of 150 has already been born and is somewhere on Earth. Is this life expectancy just growing in the developed world, Sonia, or what about places like Africa?
Well, life expectancy is growing around the world, in fact. But you know, obviously, you're better off if you're born in a wealthy country versus a poor country. And there are real divides between countries. I mean, if you take a look at the highest life expectancy, according to the CIA World Factbook, that's in Monaco, and that's 89 years. And the lowest on that list is Angola at 38 years. So that's a really big divide.
You were saying that you think that longevity is going to grow exponentially in the coming years. What are the big factors on the horizon that will extend longevity?
Right. There's so many exciting things going on in the lab right now. You've probably heard of something called tissue engineering, which is the ability for scientists to grow brand new organs for humans using their own stem cells. So, for instance, there was a recent case of a man who lived in Iceland who was diagnosed with a cancerous tumor in his windpipe, and it was the size of a golf ball. They tried chemotherapy. That didn't work. And they said, look, you're going to die unless you try this new experimental procedure that we've done a few times on other people. And of course, he said yes, like most of us would do, I think. And so what they did is they took a 3D scan of his windpipe, created a model of it using some synthetic nanomaterials, and then took some of his own stem cells and seeded that new scaffold with the stem cells, incubated it in the lab, and after a few days took out the diseased one and put in the new one. And today he's cancer-free and healthy. And that is very exciting. And that's only one of the technologies that I cover in my book in the science chapter for how we'll be able to live longer, and not just longer, but healthier lives, healthier.
Well, you talk about regenerative medicine, restoring broke-down body parts, bladders, lungs, and hearts. But one of the most fascinating things was, of course, gene research has changed everything in biology and medicine. You talked to Dr. Cynthia Kenyon at the University of California in San Francisco. This kind of amazed me. She found out a way to mess around with the genes in a tiny worm to extend that worm's lifespan.
Yes, Cynthia is an amazing researcher, and she works on little worms called C. elegans, and she tweaked some of their genetic pathways, the DAF2 for people who know those pathways, And that allowed the worms to live twice as long as they normally would in a healthy state. Then she tweaked another pathway, DAF16, and those two tweaks together allowed the worms to live six times longer than they normally would. But not just longer, healthier, it actually slowed down aging, which is interesting because up until this point, scientists never thought that aging was something that you could stop. It seemed like something that was just part of nature and there was nothing we could do about it. But now after her experiments, and then there was another lab that managed to actually get that number up to 10 times. So the worms were living 10 times their normal life expectancy at a really young age or in a young state. Mm-hmm. That tells us that aging is plastic and it's something that we can actually control.
Sonia Arison is my guest. She's just written 100+, How the Coming Age of Longevity Will Change Everything. She's a senior fellow at the Pacific Research Institute. Maybe you've got a question or a comment. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free 800-289-5869. Or write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. Since human beings have been on Earth, they've wanted to live longer than they have, and with something that is so universally desired, there are a lot of people who come out to prey on that. Isn't there a lot of quackery out there about living longer?
There is, unfortunately, and I think that's one of the reasons why this field, the legitimate field, hasn't moved faster than it would have otherwise, because when you talk about anti-aging or slowing down aging, it does sound like quackery, and we've certainly had enough of that in the past, and there still are people and corporations that exist that are selling snake oil, essentially, but that's not what I'm talking about, and there really is some serious research going on that shows that we can have an impact on aging.
We got this email from Walter who asks, can futurist Sonia Arison discuss the possibility that the population of the Earth will decrease to 1 to 1.5 billion by 2100? The reason, he writes, is peak oil. Such notables as Richard Heinberg have published extensively on this. In a nutshell, he writes, we live on a finite Earth, and the only reason we've been able to reach our present population levels is because of cheap fossil fuels, end quote.
Well, that takes a lot of different issues and puts them all together in one. Let me address the population question, because I think that's one of the first questions that comes to mind when this issue comes up of living longer. And I have a chart in my book. I have an entire chapter on the environment and population, and I have a chart that shows world population growth rates. And when you look at it, it's quite stunning because you can see it sharply going down. World population growth rates are declining. Now, that's not to say that world population is declining, because it's not. It's growing. But fertility rates are shooting down all over the world, even in underdeveloped countries. And so then that brings up the question of, well, what happens if people don't die as soon as they would normally die? What happens to population growth? And, you know, I think the answer to that is population does continue to grow because fewer people are dying, but it doesn't grow as fast as it would grow if we're just looking at fertility rates. I guess what I'm trying to say is real heavy population growth comes from births, not from fewer deaths. And so there was an interesting study that was done at the University of Chicago where researchers took a look at the country of Sweden and said, well, what would happen to the population of Sweden if the entire population had became immortal and essentially never died, right? And that's not what I'm talking about in my book. I'm just talking about an extension to 150 years. So let's take the extreme case of becoming immortal. What would happen to Sweden's population over the next 100 years? And they used a model that typically the UN and World Bank and those types of organizations use, and they put in the numbers. And what they found was really shocking to me. What they found was that Sweden's population would only increase by 22% over 100 years. And that really blew me away because I thought it would increase much more than that. And the reason it doesn't increase so much is because the fertility rates are low. Mm-hmm. And like I said, heavy population growth really comes from births, not from fewer deaths.
Well, let's take your point for granted that there will be extended life expectancy. And a lot of countries have been looking at this and dealing with some of the problems that might result with it. A lot of countries outside the United States, I believe Japan, has a much more rapidly aging population. So you've got the issue of fewer people in the workforce supporting a higher percentage who've retired, who are not in the workforce. And we've done a lot of discussion about Medicare and Social Security being pressed in this country already. What happens when these kind of social support systems must support multiple generations of older people?
Right. That's a good question. But I think we have to answer the question first of what will the older people look like. Today, with the current state of technology, older people, especially in places like Japan, when they're very old, do need a lot of support. But I think in the future, when a lot of the technologies like the gene therapy and the tissue engineering and the personalized medicine and all of those things that are currently in the lab but will be reaching consumers at some point, and we don't know how long that will take. So there could be a lag, which is unfortunate. I like to see there be a shorter period of time between lab to consumer. But when those technologies actually hit the market, then older people will not be old like we think of them today. They'll still be productive. Of course, they won't be retiring at 65. I mean, we won't be doing that today anyway, I don't think, because there's such a crisis with Social Security. But, you know, they'll be working longer and productive longer and part of society for longer. And so things will look a lot different in the future.
Sonia Arison is the author of 100 Plus, which looks at our aging population and how getting old doesn't mean necessarily getting decrepit, and a lot of the advances and also a lot of the implications of that for what that'll mean for our society. For example, Sonia, you look at how expanded longevity could affect our families. What effects do you think it'll have?
Right. Well, you know, if you could live to be 150 years old in a relatively healthy state, and if fertility gets extended, that could really change things. And I have a chapter on the family in the book where I look at fertility technologies and the advances that are going on in that field, which are quite amazing, actually. I hadn't realized how far scientists have gone in that field until I started doing the research. You know, it might be possible at some point to grow a woman's own eggs in the lab using some of her ovarian tissue. They've already done it with mice, which is interesting because right now it's, you know, that's the problem for women. You know, past 40, it's really difficult to have children with your own biological eggs. So if fertility can be extended and health can be extended, then you could see fertility into much later ages. And so you could get really interesting combinations of families where you could have maybe a woman has a child when she's 20 and then has another one when she's 45 or 50 or 60 even. And so there's big age gaps in between siblings. Or you could see large age gap pairings between men and women who are getting married. You could see a 90-year-old marrying a 30-year-old. And maybe that wouldn't seem quite as weird as it seems today because the 90-year-old, right?
Yeah.
The 90-year-old would be in better shape and healthier. And energetic.
Only be like a 70-year-old. It's still a little weird, Sonia.
It might be. And, you know, these are issues that we're going to have to work out.
You also take a look at how longevity might affect our religious outlook. How would it affect that?
Right. That was the most interesting chapter of the entire book for me to write because I started out with a premise that turned out to be wrong. My idea was that as we become more scientific and more modern, we'll become less religious. And, you know, that's what the sociologists thought back in the 70s. But when I started to dig into the data and look at all the religious scholarship and the sociological scholarship, it turns out that that's not the case. You know, because I thought, you know, the further away you get from death also, the further less you'll care about religion because you're not thinking about the afterlife anymore. But it turns out that I forgot about something. And the thing that I forgot about is that religion has another role, and that's to help us with the purpose of life. And so I think religion will always play a really important role, especially as we live longer, because we'll have more need for guidance in terms of why are we here and what is our purpose. And so I think that also should speak to religions and how they might evolve over time as we do have longer and healthier lives, because I think the ones that will be the religions that will be successful will be the ones that focus more on purpose rather than on the afterlife.
A lot of these ideas about extending life have been lumped under the term singularity, a concept popularized by futurist Ray Kurzweil. And you are one of the founders of Singularity University, which Kurzweil got underway, that's in the Silicon Valley. What does singularity mean and how does it relate to lifespan?
Right. So the singularity is a point at which we can't predict what will happen. And it's a term that's used more when we're looking at things like artificial intelligence, which is something Ray Kurzweil speaks a lot about. And, you know, at the same time as medical technologies are advancing, so are our abilities in terms of artificial intelligence. So there's a number of people who are working in that field who believe that computers will continue to get smarter and smarter, and at some point they'll just get so smart we can't even predict what's going to happen afterwards. And, you know, the singularity doesn't have that much to do with my book, except for the fact that it's based on the idea of exponentially growing technology. And technology is growing exponentially, and that's why we started Singularity University, because we wanted to bring in experts from all these different fields like nanotechnology and artificial intelligence and biotech and medicine and robotics and bring them all together to see how the technology is advancing and what they can learn from each other. And that's how the singularity is related to my book.
Mm-hmm. Underlying your optimism about extended longevity and our ability to deal with these problems and our ability to deal with the how this might affect the environment is this real optimism about technology. Why should we assume an optimistic perspective on technology solving all these things? It's very much oriented towards private companies that would be doing a lot of these things. Why assume that their goals are for the betterment of humankind versus just making a boatload of money?
Right. Well, oftentimes those two things go together. Companies will make money because they're serving a need, and that's how they grow. But I think the optimism on the technology question really comes from the idea that the technology is growing exponentially, and most people don't realize it. And so when you think about things like nanosolar, which could potentially be a way to help solve our energy crisis, you know, some people will look at that and say, oh, well, you know, people have been talking about solar forever. It's never going to go anywhere. But I don't think that's the case. And if you actually look at the field and look at how nanotechnology is advancing, it's clear that at some point that is going to be a viable technology and we will be able to use it quite effectively. And so I go over a number of different technologies in the book. Another one is synthetic biology, which is very exciting and most people don't think about probably all that often, but that's another way to create fuel or another way to eat up garbage and turn garbage into waste. There, at some point, we might just be turning our garbage into waste, in which case garbage will become incredibly valuable, which is sort of funny.
It sure is. Sonia Arison, thank you so much for speaking to us today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Sonia Arison, the book is called 100 Plus, How the Coming Age of Longevity Will Change Everything. And she came to us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. We have production help from Allie Ferguson. Andy Hurst is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.